Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, while Ireland is rich in folklore, less well known perhaps to most of us is the folklore of the travelling community. Owen de Vardoon is the author of Why the Moon Travels, a book of traveller folklore that was transformed into a stage play and has just been performed as part of the Galway International Arts Festival. Owen, good afternoon to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You grew up listening to these stories, did you?
I did, very much so. And you know the way people say that children are born with curious minds? I was born with a very nosy one. And then at the age of three and from ever on, I'm always about the idea of why do we think certain things, including about the world around us, where origins come from, everything from why actually does the moon travel to why do badgers have stripes on their faces to the spiders that weave. And we're quite lucky within our community to have many of those origin myths still intact and they've been lost to the wider population, but for whatever reasons we still have many of them.
Yeah, and was there like always a person in your family that people would say go and ask Auntie Mary because she knows that the answer to all these questions? Was there one person or did everybody?
Oh, everybody was so. And then I think my parents quite quickly learned at a very young age that stories were very much a trigger for comfort for me, so they would start gathering on my behalf as well.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and what kinds of, would the stories, the folklore always explain something? Or does it kind of, if you like, give a history of Ireland and parts of Ireland?
History of place. And if you think about nomadic people moved around, so we'd be exposed to a far more wider array of stories and the nuances of stories. So while the story might be a certain way in Kerry, it might be very different in Donegal. So we got the opportunity to touch them and feel them and reweave them. But many of our older stories that known to the wider population has those in them. It doesn't get framed that way. If you think about the Ulster cycle, Cúchulainn and Meath, all these people, they're all nomadic people. They're all travel.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I was learning these stories growing up, I could see my community within them. But if they're framed from a settled normal point of view, you lose the fact that they have camps and they move a lot, going, oh, they sound suspicious, they like travellers. And so I think about, so people have these stories, and we have our own version of stories, like we have different versions of like the Salmon of Knowledge and the Children of Lear and St. Bridget's. Yeah. Like, we have a story of St. Bridget's cloak, but ours includes who made the needle that she sewed it with. Tiernan and Og and the horse that returns with Oisín. Why does the horse not age? Sure, it was a traveller woman who shoed the horse. So there's all these versions of these stories that are embedded within our community that the vast majority of people don't get to experience or witness or hear because of the kind of cultural divide that's grown over the years. But part of our culture is part of the Irish culture, so it's shared.
Yeah.
And having the opportunity to share that with people is fabulous.
Yeah. And but presumably there are folklore stories in the traveller tradition that are exclusive to travellers, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Give us an example of one.
One I would say would be the story itself, the title story of Why the Moon Travels.
Yeah.
So it was a story that once upon a time the moon itself was sedentary and was sitting upon the sky like a silver disc. And once in a river so often it said it would visit the earth in the form of a beautiful woman. And one of the times he came to the earth, didn't she look upon this traveller man wandering. He said, I like him. And he looked at her, was petrified of her, the moon taking form, and went to running. But she sung a beautiful song and he realised that she was enchanting. So they spent many, many years together. And she promised him into silence, because the moon is eternal, it doesn't have time for mortals. So he kept his word, and because he had all his time with someone of eternity, he began to age so much slower than the people around him. Eventually his friends came to him and said, like, going, where do you go once a month? And he said, listen, I can't tell you. He goes, like, where do you be going? And eventually he said, listen, I'm in love with the moon, and the moon's in love with me. And of course they go, what? Mm-hmm. You're in love with the moon? So he was a bit ashamed by it. He said, next time she comes, if you hide behind these rose bushes and stay quiet, you'll see when the moon comes. So the moon descended from the sky one evening, and because she sees all things, she realised that she'd be looked upon. So she was heartbroken. She fled back to the sky, and she knew that she loved him and he loved her, but because of the betrayal, they could never be together. But since that day, the moon itself and her time with Travers, she travels the sky, and once a month she looks towards for a new lover, and not finding one, she looks away again.
Wow, that's lovely. That is absolutely lovely. Now, you did write, as I said in the introduction, you wrote a book of these stories, but I assume these are stories that were designed and probably have been altered and changed because of the oral tradition.
Yeah. And they're considered living things. So we don't have the version of a story, we have a version.
Yeah.
And even when it came to the creation of the Why the Moon Travels and working with the actors in Why the Moon Travels, the play, it was that we have a framework. We recorded things orally first to make sure they had that cadence of the voice and the storytelling. So we weren't, pun intended, we weren't settling the stories. We were allowing them to grow and move in their shapes while honouring the oral history, but trying to create a space to ensure that there has a sense of safety around them. And even with my own work with the National Museum, a lot of that is when we look at objects and people, they're all stories. We're all just a collection of stories and accommodations of histories. Mm. So I get to spend all of my life and time looking, reviewing, celebrating, honouring, keeping stories. And I think that it's something that we're all filled with, especially within an Irish context. Like, we all have beloved, like, Shanna Key's stories and our older lives. But even in the modern context, when I look at things like YouTube, they're all storytellers, just telling it in a very different way.
Yeah.
How stories are to evolve. We're quite blessed that in our community, that tradition is still very much intact, although weakening in places, like, all things are changing.
Yeah.
It's something very much a living tradition.
Yeah. Now, for the play, how did you decide to stage that? Was it people telling stories to each other?
So we came across three beautiful actors within the community, and we worked with Moonfish. Kind of productions, but it was that we created, here's the framework of the stories. This is what the story is going to go on. Can you incorporate your stories into the stories? Like, going, have you heard this before? Thankfully, they have. How does it represent in your life? These words of a script that we pulled together, are they the words that found yourself in your mouth, or would you tell them your own way? So it was actually gentle. I think we spent about 5 months gently working with the stories, make sure that they were authentic to the person saying them, and they also had the ability to incorporate their own lives. So it wasn't just, here are six stories from the community. Here are six stories that have meaning, attribution, has a personal resonance with the person sharing them. So it's more of an open conversation rather than a da-da presentation.
Yeah, so I imagine there wasn't even a script, really.
We had the structure of it. And then eventually that develops, because you have things like lighting and timing and all these wonderful things that now still, I think, are blocking, that I've very recently learned about, in order to hold that space. But very much, just like Travers, there's a sense of freedom and movement in it.
Yeah. Now, and you did say that this tradition a little bit is under a bit of pressure. Is that perhaps due to... many families don't live in traveller communities anymore.
Yeah, I mean, life expectancy is an issue of, and I suppose, broken generational kind of a sharing of information, cultural safe kind of settings. Like, I mean, for eons, all people sat around fires and would have kept company with each other, would have told stories. And even actually, part of the play, we used shadow casting, which is the shadow puppetry, in order to capture that sense of the warmth of a fire and the movement of a story. Those spaces are greatly decreasing. And even when majority of travellers having limited access to public spaces where we can share them, it becomes much, much more reduced and limiting ability for us to actually share our stories, share our understandings of the stories, and just connect.
Mm. So would there be a generation of younger travellers who perhaps wouldn't be as familiar with these stories?
Very much so. And there's an act, an ongoing reclamation of it.
Yeah.
Which is needed. But I think that's needed for the general population as well, of us relearning our ancient stories and more contemporary stories and seeing where they place us in the world and where they might guide us around it.
Yeah. And now, you mentioned your work in the National Museum of Ireland. What's in that? Because that's a permanent exhibit, would that be correct?
No, it's actually a role. So,
right.
Yeah, and I'm very, very blessed for it to be permanent. So I'm an inclusive histories creator of Travel Culture. So what's really we're looking at is looking at the museum as an institution and trying to take away the walls of the museum and kind of decentralise the creators who are experts in their own right but don't always have cultural authority, and actually make the exhibitions and the process around those exhibitions and the collection of lower history objects to be community-led. So part of my role isn't to go across the country and pick up all these items that belong to us.
Yeah.
It's to work with our communities to saying, rather than what the museum wants, what does the community want the museum to become custodians of?
Mm.
You know, what do you want the museum to protect? You know? And sometimes that's creating exhibitions, incorporating exhibitions, including Changing Ireland, which is actually going to be launched next month. It's very exciting. There's at least five travel-specific items there, although we're connected in different ways. To honouring the fact that people want their objects to stay at home. And then how do we support them to keep those objects and just record where they are? So it's not a process of going and gathering, it's going and honouring and finding out how people actually envision that.
Oh, right. OK, because I suppose, a lot of people might be reluctant to give up things that are
and a number of people have less object history. So if you're traditionally nomadic, either it's deeply important to you and on a very sentimental level, or it's deeply practical. Otherwise, you don't bring it with you. So the objects that we do have are very sacred to many people. So see, and we've gotten some amazing things into the National Collection, but a lot of times people are saying, I want to keep this. And we go, we'll just document it. We'll scan it. We'll take photographs of it. Like,
we're
delighted it's in the world. And then how do you want us to help you in order to preserve it? And that's just as an important role as having it in the walls and building of a museum.
It's fascinating stuff, Owen. Thank you so much for coming in to talk to us today. That was Owen de Vreydoun there. And as you heard, a man of many, many parts.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.